from things that are transpiring in the south. We thank you for the content of thy word, for a sure word of prophecy, the revelation of spirit which you gave unto thy apostles, in which you confirmed the things that were to come to pass, in which you told them about the course and destiny of Christian civilization, the revelation of the prophets and the errors that preceded, and for the confirmation in our time that thy word is truth. We pray also for the great civilization which you have constructed with vision and with spirit. We pray, our Father, that you shall grant unto us an understanding knowledge of how we must respond to thy call and thy instructions to occupy. Grant unto us that with clarity we can observe the things that are taking place. We can bear witness with initiative as we watch thy kingdom come, as we see the vast attempt of the forces of evil to destroy that which is righteous. So at this hour, as we think upon these things that relate to our national as well as to our cultural life, we pray thy blessings rest upon our meditation. In thy name, amen. Tonight we turn to a subject of the restoration of the kingdom economy. How can it be accomplished? We are faced with one of the most crucial hours in history. There's one thing that you can be sure we will continue to do, and that is to tell you what's transpiring as we see it, regardless of the circumstances that are involved or who it affects. There is no doubt that this is the most crucial hour in the history of this great nation of God's kingdom. Among all the nations of the kingdom of God, America stands out foremost, both by designation, prophetically, from the lips of the prophets and from the identification given unto it by Christ in the book of Revelation when he spake to John. It is the only great nation today of Christendom whose emblem is the outstretched wings of an eagle. It is to the leadership of such a nation that the nations of Christian civilization were told that they must flock, and under the protection of the two wings of a great eagle, the great resistance was to be made in this climactic hour of time against the forces of communism and the great patterns of evil and corruption that were to come like a flood out of the dragon's mouth, and to move against Christian civilization out of the areas of Asia and down out of the north. And strangely enough, that is in the fulfillment of the prophecies of the 18th chapter of Isaiah, a clear identification of this nation as the great nation of the outstretched wings of an eagle. A nation in which something great and new was developed as it related to all the peoples that had descended out of the strains of the house of Abraham and the great Caucasian race line and produced the civilizations which destiny had declared would accept messiahship, would be identified with the person of Christ, and whose civilization would be inspired by the vision and the energies of spirit that would emerge from the ministry of Messiah. Of these nations, Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, Nordic, and Basque, and Lombard peoples migrated to produce this nation, a new world order, known as Ordo Secularum. There was a nation of one race, but many nationalities, one household, but here blended together under one great spiritual concept. Now, we must recognize at this hour, and the Supreme Court has verified these statements, this is a Christian nation. The Supreme Court has ruled on three separate occasions, this is a Christian nation. And the fact remains that there are many forces that are seeking to destroy Christian civilization. They have been engaged in this battle to destroy it since the very beginning of their assault upon the person of Jesus Christ. They have sought down through the ages to dominate society with conspiracy after conspiracy. Today, there is no doubt the same powers that have sought to entrap and engulf the world, both in their economic conspiracies as well as in their political and semi-pseudo-religious attempts to deify their own stratas of theology and at the same time seek to destroy that which opposes is hurled against your society as such. We have many forms of this assault in our time. But in this hour, one of the most dangerous things which we face is an economy that is controlled by the enemies of Jesus Christ. An economy which would build a world order that would subordinate every Christian nation. Now, it is not important to me whether or not those who would seek to disagree with truth in this hour agree with us. It is not basically important whether the great majority agree or disagree with you. If you are right and you recognize that that truth is verified both by the inspiration of the Word of God, and it is the purpose of God that that rightness shall prevail, though you might be outnumbered as it relates to the situations and its knowledge, your success is guaranteed and assured. There is no doubt in my mind that there is still a remnant in the nations of God's kingdom that have not bowed the knee to Baal. that are not going to permit themselves to be intimidated by the forces of evil, so they are afraid to discuss truth or afraid to reveal truth. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free, is the only formula that can save this nation from the great down conspiracy that has been directed against your society. If you are to question at any time that the biblical statements of Jesus, as they referred prophetically to tomorrow, were true, all you would have to do would be to compare what he said and then look at the situations which we have today. He warned us that one of the powers of Antichrist would be to try to create a world order, a system that would supersede the individual sovereignty of nations until it enveloped all nations and as such were known as all nations. That such an institution once raised up would be in the power of the enemies of Jesus Christ. That such an institution would seek to destroy God's kingdom. That kings would bend their power to it. That nations would submit themselves unto its councils and its decisions. And that it would seek to control every branch of economy. That it would seek to control both the sources of production of the raw materials of industry as well as the dispersion of its goods. That it would seek to take over the distribution of its economy by controlling its money and its monetary policies, whereby the flow of goods are continued within the structure of a nation. They would seek to pool all these economies till no man could buy them, sell, save, he served such an insidious institution. Now this was all related by Jesus to his apostle John. It is impossible for the enemy to attack the things which we say, subtle though he might be, and though he would like to separate the thing which we say from theology, it is impossible for him to separate these basic truths from the things which Jesus had to say about them. There is no way today for a Christian to consider the things that are transpiring in the world except he recognize that these are but the fulfillment of those things Christ warned us would arise and which he warned us to resist against. There is no doubt today that the forces which were in opposition to Jesus Christ during the hour of the creation of his kingdom, during the development of his ministry and the sending out of his disciples, are the powers still directing their affluence against Christian civilization. You must note that it is not against the law for you and I to oppose the enemies of Jesus Christ. It is not against the law for you and I to discuss the things that relate to American security. Because you, at this moment, are playing one of the most vital positions among the nations of the world as it relates to the events of things to come in the next century. There is no doubt that if there was a way to silence those that dare to speak the truth, that silence would be developed in this time. But it is impossible for even the Congress of the United States to make a law abridging religion. It is impossible for the forces that seek to control truth today and seek to silence those who would declare that truth to stop the reading of the Scriptures or its interpretation. You don't have to worry about your Congress trying to do that. You don't have to worry about your Senate. But I would not say that much for the executive within the structure of this nation. For there is already signs that from behind the scenes there are powers that are seeking to enter into, permit to, arrangements that America would never approve. You are in one of the most crucial hours of history. At the same time, historically, you are in one of the greatest hours of history. When at last America waking up is speaking out and talking back. And that is historically a good sign in these United States. You are in an hour of great and crucial problem. United Nations is the greatest conspiracy against Christian civilization that has ever been erected in your time. For instance, from the very beginning of the opening of that institution, you will remember that it was forbidden for them to open those sessions with prayer when they first met in San Francisco because they were afraid they might offend Soviet Russia. In this great Christian nation where we open every session of Congress with prayer, God have mercy on us if we're ashamed to open up anything we're going to participate in with prayer because it would offend the Russians or the Russian regime. And because of that situation, we barred Christ out of the United Nations in the very beginning of that assembly. But do not forget tonight that in the hour that that assembly held its first sessions in San Francisco, that Stettinius, who was but a stuffed shirt Secretary of State, who little knew about the world situations and whose speeches were written by the convicted communist Dalton Trumbo, was presiding apparently over UN. But behind the scenes, it was Alger Hiss who directed the entire United Nations Conference. It was Alger Hiss who determined who could speak and who could have rooms. It was Alger Hiss who had prepared and laid the foundations for a United Nations Conference
while the monetary funds which had been conducted and drawn up with the assistance of left-wing forces behind the scenes in our government, as well as those actively a part of the administration's past, men like Harry Dexter White, following a policy in which Morgenthau and Frankfurter and others were preparatory for its design, had drawn up in preparatory conferences a plan to take over the economy of the nations of the world. In Dumbarton Oaks and Bretton Woods, treason was committed. There, my friends, where senators could not come, there in a place where no American representative, except a few specially selected ones that fell into the Weiss-Morgenthau plan, they entered in a plan drawn up with the Laskys and with the aid of those who had been planning an economic control of all the monetary funds of the world. They set up these two conferences on American shores. When those conferences were over, the people of the United States did not know what was contained in Dumbarton Oaks and Bretton Woods. Little did they understand the far-reaching effects of those conferences. They were woven into a world monetary fund. But when the United Nations was set up in San Francisco, there was woven into the United Nations scheme the Dumbarton Oaks, Bretton Woods World Monetary Agreements. Thus it was when your senators ratified the Charter of the United Nations by becoming signatory to it on the propaganda lie that this was an institution to build world peace, to end war, to bring about the media for the exchange of ideas between nations. They did not know that they were ratifying a world monetary conference that would require, before it was through, all of the assets of America to be placed on deposit to further the program of the United Nations. Little did they know that the program of Antichrist to take over the economy of this great Christian nation was involved carefully and with determination and purpose in that monetary fund. Senator Pat McCarran, one of America's great legislators, said the other day, "If I had known what I know now and realized what was hidden inside of that United Nations Charter, I not only would never have ratified it, but I pray God that He forgive me for ever having ratified this great trap in which our civilization has been engulfed." And that is the voice of a patriot. Senator Welker, one of America's great courageous senators, said to us, "There is no more dangerous or insidious machine on earth than the United Nations. This conspiracy and trap will not only destroy our sovereignty completely, but unless we get out of it in the next 3 years, we are all done as a nation." And he was absolutely right. Let me tell you this. There were man after man in your Senate today that understands this now more thoroughly than he ever understood it before. There is no doubt that there are more congressmen that understand this danger than they ever did before, and they find it through the years because of their laxness and not remembering some of the great words of Thomas Jefferson, they have permitted one of the most and greatest dangers to our security to develop. There was one thing that Thomas Jefferson said, and how people like to quote Thomas Jefferson when they're talking about democracy. They think that he is the great emancipator for the terms and the development of ideas which they like to refer to as philosophy. But Thomas Jefferson, at heart, was the supporter of the concept of the Great Republic. And in the structure of its support, he said, "Do not have confidence in any executive. Never trust him, for to place confidence in a man is the beginning of the downfall of liberty." That's Thomas Jefferson, unquote. And you can go right inside the hall of that Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C., and he said, "The legislative and judicial bodies must observe the executive always with suspect, and with ever vigilance seek to retain as much power as possible and limit executive as far as possible, and therein lies the maintenance of liberty." And I looked upon those words on the wall and realized that America has forgotten some of the words of Thomas Jefferson. Thank God the United States Senate is beginning to wake up, and issues that involve your security are the issues now that are the most important issues before your nation. But let me tell you this. In this attempt to take over the economy of a nation, in this attempt to control the economy of all the nations of the world, the process was set up, which at this very moment actually has as security for its program and its proposition the assessed valuation of all of the possessions that we call America, together with gold and silver and with bonds on deposit. That is only a part of that situation involved in what we call United Nations at this hour. We can't go in tonight into a long discussion of what United Nations has been, but we know that woven within that scheme was the program that would spell defeat to your nation. No nation could protect itself long unless it was capable of defending itself against its enemies. This calls for a strong army, a strong navy. This calls for strong military defenses. It calls for a royal citizenry. But the United Nations supported two things. One, it supported a process that would break down your immigration barriers and flood America so that you couldn't protect the security of your nation by determining the content of that nation as its citizenry were expanded according to its desire. In that conspiracy right now is Senator Lehman's new scheme, which he now, as we told you a week ago, has now been admitted and released by Mr. Lehman, who yesterday said that he intends the nearest opportunity to open up a new barrage on the immigration program, to open up immigration between all member nations of the United Nations without any immigration barriers. That means the end of the structure of the American family. That's the end of your type of culture and civilization if this satanic situation were able to be developed. Remember that soundness of preserving the status quo of the nation is one of the very fundamental principles upon which your society has been founded. It was never intended that you were to absorb all the things that were against God and all the things that were opposed to your way of life into all the processes that exist throughout the nations of the world, because as a half nation, they look at you, they flop in if they had the opportunity, until they had exhausted your creative ability and your initiative by absorbing the things which you produced. The fact remains that this is number one. Number two, under your entrance into the United Nations, you became voluntarily, by the ratification of that charter, participant in its program. Its councils control your armies. Your armies can't move without its permission. They could involve you in the Korean War. They could forbid your generals from winning that war, and they could keep you from doing the things strategically that would have defeated the Chinese communists in the first few months of the war. In fact, when you were engaged in that war, forever let this be on your memory, it was the United Nations and President Truman under their direction that promised the peoples of Red China that though they were the aggressors in North Korea, we would never bomb their soil, we would never attack their supply lines or their cities, and promised them immunity. And I have that under the document and seal of the United States State Department, both in my files and under photostat for protection. Let me assure you this. Whenever we entered into this program of Antichrist, we were surrendering not only our sovereignty, but we were disallowing the Declaration of Independence, which our forefathers made in the hour when God by destiny had decreed that it was time for this great nation to rise to fulfill its responsibilities before the world. Now I know, and that's why we discussed this tonight, I know that this great conspiracy against the economy of God's kingdom is utterly doomed. I know it's going to fall as prophecy has declared it, and as the people awakening with a great anger against this evil will tear it down if they have to tear down its symbols brick by brick. In this idle hour, we have watched the seeds of treason. We have watched state departments involve your State Department in secret agreements. We're not going to take time tonight to discuss the vodka foreign policy. That's been one of the great curses of America. When presidents were too drunk to know what they were signing, as Eliot refers to his father asking your forgiveness for the signing of the Potsdam Yalta agreements or the Potsdam agreements. Remember that during those periods of time when he was meeting with Stalin and with the Premier Stalin and with Winston Churchill, that it was Alger Hiss and the red influences in the State Department that wrote up all the fine print. When finally it was submitted, he never read it. It was page after page of protocol. He signed it. Later he
realized how far-reaching it was. We told you last week something that was a basic charge of great importance. It was cited courageously by some. One great editor said to me, it's the greatest weakness that the Republican Party has shown since it has been elected. In fact, the great treason was committed during a Democratic machine did not mean the Democrats were essentially responsible for it, but it did mean that anti-Christian evil in a world conspiracy had invaded that party, and they set out to capture it. They knew where they were going, and the party didn't. They were able not only to capture it, it meant, but they were able to create great acts of treason while acting within the structure of its administration. One of the things that had caused a fighting resistance upon the part of the Republican Party in the United States was its gradual realization that treason had been committed. Yet during the hours when they were to decide on a representative for the Republican Party, they didn't select a Republican. They selected a man that met the approval of Mr. Truman, whose approval had already been given by men from behind the scenes. When Mr. Eisenhower was selected, this was probably the first time he'd ever been a Republican in his life. The fact remains, however, that the great fighting objectives of men like Dirksen and others who had discussed the discrepancies of conspiracy, the revelations made by internal security committees, which, thank God, Jenner now still heads, even though there are forces that have tried to upset it. These men who have been involved in security had discovered things that were vital and things that should have been exposed for America's good, that we might reverse our steps instead of walking in the direction of destruction. But when the administration came to the fight, none of these things were used in the clinches. None of these things were told to America, and they held back on it. Then when the Eisenhower administration went in, it lost its greatest opportunity for statesmanship. Had this man been a statesman and not a tool of Barney Baruch in his crowd, as he admitted at Barney Baruch's birthday party, he would have repudiated the Potsdam and Yalta agreements as something that the American people had never put their names to and were not responsible for the executive for the action of irresponsible executive action. Had there been any courage in that administration, now we would have repudiated this program that gave all Asia over half the world to the hands of Soviet Russia. It would have repudiated the policies that surrendered Austria and Czechoslovakia, which the German High Command was prepared to surrender to the American troops and unto our nation, but was turned down by the Morgenthau policy, which Mr. Eisenhower owns up to he was following the dictates of. They would have repudiated, however, the policy of administration that forced the general to make decisions by demand that he knew was not wise. No repudiation of this. In fact, silence. I received word from one of the most brilliant senators in the United States yesterday. He said, Dr. Swift, we've now discovered something. We have discovered why there has been no repudiation. We have suddenly discovered why the President of the United States is fighting the Brickard Amendment. Let me tell you, there has been no evidence under God of the awakening of a nation that has been more influential and essential to the security of our society than this cry of the nation for the Brickard Amendment. That call that is deluging senators every day from all over the nation in letters and telegrams for the passage of that amendment is one of the healthiest signs that America is waking up and still has a little independent thinking going on outside of the influence of the proverbial press and some of the influences that are directed in the vehicles of public opinion in radio and television. Let me tell you this. When Senator George, after Eisenhower's continued and constant refusal to even participate in a program in any agreement or adjustment to the Brickard Amendment, he said there is no way that the President can justify his desire to retain power to make agreements that he does not wish to submit to the Senate of the United States or to the approval of the American people that elected him. Let me tell you that it is high time we look with distrust upon any leadership that refuses to submit its plans to the nation that it is supposed to represent as a great republic. Let me tell you, we have the evidence of treason tonight. I charge that there is treason being committed
treason against your soldiers, against your battle against communism, against the very structure of your nation, and what's happened in the last 48 hours as it relates to Russia and the United States. Listen. One of the evidences of tyranny is that even in the structure of administration machine, men who dare to even have opinion that would desire to see a strong legislative body still with the right to protect its society have been under pressure demanded to resign. The resignation of Manion announced yesterday when he was forced to resign from his position in governmental relations because he approved in his thinking of the Brickner Amendment by the order of Eisenhower has been one of the healthiest bombshells to break in the United States Senate. This is tonight's newspaper I'm holding in my hands. Listen to these words. As the Clarence Manion incident explodes the senators, it says, with wrath and anger, Senator Brickner said, there will never be any harmony promoted now in face of this. Senator Jenner said, if this means a man must walk the plank because he believes in certain fundamental things which are basically American, then it's time something was done about it at once. Senator Schofield of Kansas said, if a man who serves a position of responsibility must bow to that which is wrong in the face of the fact that he knows it, in order to keep his job, it's time we looked at what was behind it and did something about it. Now, this is what one of America's senators told me yesterday in a very important revelation. He said, we have found that already the advised by the ill-advisers that are behind it, that President Eisenhower has already made secret commitments and secret agreements that he does not want submitted to the ratification of the United States Senate and doesn't want to have to bring out now because America is not ready for it and would repudiate the whole thing. And under God, we'll never be ready for any of these appeasement policies with the Soviets. Let me show you this. Last week we talked to you about some of the things we were on the job to see in Washington develop. One of them was the courageous opposition of Senator Welker against the treason that was inside the State Department that brought Ambassador Dean back from Korea, who secretly all the time was a sympathizer with the Reds while our boys were fighting Red Communism, and he was our ambassador to Korea. What type of insane imbecility was involved in an act of a State Department who would send a pro-Red ambassador to an ally with which we were supposedly fighting communism, and our boys were dying in Korea? This man came back to sell a soft Senate on the idea that we would have to recognize Red China, split it from Russia by being so friendly with the Red Revolution that we would not recognize that this Red Revolution was so dangerous. After all, it's just a friendly people desiring freedom. And he says, I've dealt with these Reds and I know, well, if he's been dealing with Reds, we want to know why. Fact remains, Senator Welker courageously said that this kind of treason should be thrown in prison and thrown in prison in a hurry. Senators told me in Washington that this was a bigger incident than the Alger Hiss case. It involved the Secretary of State because the Secretary of State had given his approval to the Dean incident, and had Dean been accepted and had really sold America on this phony foreign policy of recognizing Red China, he was immediately going to permit Red China to participate in the four-point conferences in that foreign conference in Germany. The fact remains that the pressure was so great that he didn't dare to do it so openly in that discussion. And Red China hasn't been recognized at that time. Now here's the status. A week ago, we told you that we were informed that there was a loophole that they were trying to protect because involved in the Brickner Amendment were clauses. And now this week's debate has put more clauses that will bring about a reconsideration of all past foreign treaties that affect our Constitution or its content. Clauses that will cause us to resurvey the whole charter of the United Nations, that will cause us to once more go into any of these things upon which we are now bound, And that's why, my friends, the fight broke out with such intensity this week. Because the situation is that they were preparing to secretly clam Red China down our necks anyhow. So tonight, the story is out. Agreement includes Red China. So they, smart boys, let Russia win their four-power conference. 70,000 Red soldiers, 70,000 soldiers guard the four principalities, principles of this conference in Berlin. 70,000 soldiers, American, British, Russian, and French, guard four men talking about peace. All the way through, we were insulted by Soviet Russia. All the way through, our intelligence was insulted by Soviet Russia. She demanded a complete control of Austria for 20 years. She demanded control of all Germany. She demanded that all troops withdraw from the continent to permit her influence over all Europe. Had we agreed to Red Russia's terms, we would have been turning all Europe, as we have turned all Asia, over to Soviet Russia and completed the encirclement of Christian civilization, as well as surrendering large portions of it to it. We have permitted those who represent us to play treason's game against civilization too often. Now listen. The big four foreign ministers agreed today to hold a Far Eastern peace conference, including Red China, in Geneva, Switzerland. Now this, my friends, is one of the things that we were not supposed to do. This is one of the things we promised Sigmund Rhee we would not do. We would recognize North Korea as a participant. We would only recognize Red China as an aggressor, but not as a nation. And so we would recognize communist troops as a body by recognizing only their general. But we would not recognize them as a nation, for if we recognized them as a nation at that conference, then there would be no way to keep Russia from seeking her in the United Nations as such. In other words, we have refused consistently since the communist invasion, since the treasonable activities of Marshall, since the conspiracies that involved Amerasia and involved the staff of Reds in the State Department and the Acheson crowd. We have refused to recognize the status of Red China. To recognize Red China is to cease to recognize General Chiang Kai-shek. If we don't recognize Kai-shek's government, then we unseat Kai-shek's hold on that fourth vote in the Security Council. If Soviet Russia gets that, then she is able to outvote us and to control that Security Council. If she controls that Security Council and you have not withdrawn from the United Nations by the time it gets into operation, it by its own vote can end completely every phase of the sovereignty of the United States of America over its people and over its policies. That is one of the reasons why that the only way that the economy of Antichrist could ever be ended is by the quick and speedy withdrawal out of that institution. It started with a curse upon it. It started with against the warnings of Christ that we should never enter into such an alliance with unbelievers to affect any governmental institution in which we would join believers with unbelievers, which is a violation of Christian principle. It is also a violation of the warning of the things that were involved in society. When Mr. Rockefeller went to his Rockefeller Center church, he was given a bill of goods on Sunday morning. They say that Congress is going to be ratified. And it would be a wonderful thing to see this establishment permanently established in America. Rockefeller ran down, violated the laws of eminent domain in the United States, and gave a territory inside of New York City to the United Nations. Say, that's no violation of law. It was. No permission was given by a congressional act to do that. You realize that United Nations area in which that building was erected is eminent domain. It was within the eminent domain of the United States. Was the surrendering of that property to a world foreign power. I went across the threshold of the United Nations building a short time ago, and I listened to a guide taking people through, and as the tourists came on to this little block of ground, he said, "You have just left the United States of America. You are now in the United Nations, the world power which is greater than the United States." And then he said, "You have just left the United States of America, you are now standing in a power greater than the United States. And then he said, do you know that there is not one crime that can be committed inside of this building that can be tried by a United States court? These people have absolute immunity. These who work here and come and go here with their briefcases cannot be arrested in New York City or in New Jersey. They can't be picked up for speeding. They can't be arrested for anything. Not one single crime can they be touched for. The only place they can be tried is if they are called by the council to answer on United Nations territory. Of course, under the same regulations, we should be able to do anything we want in that piece of ground and be immune inside the United States, because I don't know where they'd extradite you to. However, might be a good thing if we did tear it all down, blow it all up. I don't know. It's not our country anymore. It's not our country anymore, they tell us. I don't know why they don't call in Mr. Rockefeller. A group of patriots asked him who gave him permission to give away the United States of America or any part thereof.
Oh, like God.
Let me tell you something. While talking with Internal Security Committee leaders, they said, Dr. Swift, the greatest fifth column against Christian civilization is housed in that house of evil. There are more spies coming and going inside the United States without any way to stop them through the media of the United Nations than enters in or out of any other country by any other procedure. That they not only have immunity, they travel, they come, they go, but almost everybody that has been discharged from the State Department or found disloyal or found to be perverted and no longer fit for us as far mixture with decent society has gone down there and gotten a job as an agent to some one of those foreign powers and some one of those offices. So you have one of the great cancerous, lecherous spots on the face of the earth right there. But World Monetary Fund that controls the economy of the nations was transferred into that building. Now, it is an important thing that in this vital hour, while treason is being committed, that Mr. Molotov, because, now let's get this straight. Don't start moaning for Mr. Dulles's senility. I don't know what else it could be. Want to call it treason? Call it treason. Or even editorials in great newspapers are talking about what a wonderful thing Mr. Dulles did in refusing the pressure of Mr. Molotov to enter into the agreements of Austria and Germany. Why, any child knows that America would have exploded when he returned if he'd let Russia have its way on the Austrian-German policy. Well, let me show you what is treason. Mr. Molotov and was able to win that conference by setting up in Geneva a Far Eastern Peace Conference in which Red China is admitted as a nation. In this agreement, Western informants said at the Geneva Conference it will be discussed first the Korean Peace Treaty. The participation will be the United States, Great Britain, France, Russia, Communist China, South Korea, and North Korea. So that's the wedge. That now recognizes Red China as a nation. Red China, if she has a peace treaty ratified, this is what MacArthur was trying to tell America. This is the thing was the thing that Walker was discussing as one of the serious problems, and he cited, how can we make a peace now that Red China has entered in without recognizing that nation? We must destroy its military machine and only conclude our arrangements with North Korea. There was no other intelligent way to meet that proposition at that hour, because now Red China, once recognized, means that we have suddenly disenfranchised all the Chinese on Formosa. We have taken from them then their voting power in the UN, and we have betrayed that nation. What we should do is turn General Chiang Kai-shek loose, supported by sufficient strength from air and technical power to make that great wedge driven into the heart of Red China, keep them so busy at home they won't have time to threaten the security of other nations. You don't have to send one American boy. Red Nationalist China is just waiting for the assistance that we could give her technically to accomplish the beginning of such a diversion. Listen. Following the settlement of the peace treaty, notice, all cut and dry. Following the settlement of the peace treaty on Korea. Now let me show you where she's already betrayed. Already the secret commitments have betrayed South Korea. America didn't do it, but the rascals that have been speaking for you have. We promised Korea that we would unify North and South Korea. That was our commitment as a nation. We divided Korea at Yalta and Potsdam. And we have permitted Red China to annex North Korea formally 3 weeks ago in a secret conference. Now, she, as the owner of Korea, or it as now a state, held a plebiscite in the last 10 days. And of course, everybody votes like in every communist state, all one way, all cast their vote for the red state, because if you don't, you get shot, or you don't vote. So under this instance, the plebiscite says the people in North Korea voted to become a part of Red China and approved the annexation. And so she submits this at this peace treaty that we're going to have in Geneva, which already says after we have settled the peace treaty and its conditions in Geneva, a second conference is going to be called on Indochina, at which the United States, Britain, and France will meet with Russia, Red China, and Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. So having finished the Geneva deal, we will then be recognizing Red China further by sitting in with Red China on what happens to Indochina. Do you know who's qualified to speak for China at such a conference? Only the government that's legally responsible for China and not Red China. You can't do business without laws. It's Karshek and not the Red Mao that should sit in on a conference that deals with Asia's destiny. Who was the brilliant boy that did this? Mr. Dulles and Mr. Badoff, in order to save the conference from failure, agreed to this proposal. Many concessions had been offered by Mr. Molotov, and he requested that Red China be seated, and it was agreed at the conference. Now, no one said what the concessions were, because the Russians never conceded anything and never kept their word in any agreement that they've entered into with us over the last 30 years. Now, this is treason. This betrays every American boy that died in Korea. This betrays all the efforts and all the expenditure of money siphoned out of you to stop communism, in which it now is strengthening the hands of Saudi Russia. Russia would like to hold the world situation in a static state for a period of the next few months. She would like one more wheat harvest if she could get it. A delivery of the rice bowl of Asia would serve her purposes well, but one more wheat harvest if she can get it. So that would set the thinking of America and the nations toward August as a dangerous period. Remember, each one of the other two great wars started the August-September harvest in. So she would present that picture as a security level. And though we are told now by experts we are in one of the most dangerous periods, for while we are contemplating further conferences and involved in this arrangement of betrayal, we may suddenly look for an outbreak of hostilities to take place at any time. And scattered over one of the new strategies of Soviet Russia, which we will discuss in a few minutes. So we have it here on the line. No wonder we need a Bricker Amendment. No wonder we need some constitutional amendment that will demand that any agreements that are entered into by our State Department be submitted back unto our Senate. Remember, Badoff, with all of his influence as Premier, cannot, even out of weak and crumbling France, make one agreement that he doesn't submit back to the French people. Remember that no agreement can be made by Anthony Eden that he doesn't have to submit back to the Parliament of England. And it's high time that America once more protected itself by tying the hands of the executive and the foreign department from having their own way beyond the interests of American security. We don't trust them. I don't trust them because it's fundamentally evil to trust these men in this hour after they have displayed the attitude which they have with the enemy. Listen, I hold in my hands page 14, squib. Most people will find no mention of it in tomorrow's newspaper. But when the Jews controlling the Eisenhower administration, the Baruch Plan, which Mr. Eisenhower came right out and said, this is the Baruch Plan, ask that we pool as a great semblance to the world of our desire for freedom, our atomic knowledge, our wisdom, our atomic bombs, and our supplies, and our stockpiles. Turn it over to the United Nations as the great keeper of trust. What will you get? You turned over your sovereignty, you turned over your army, and they forbade you to pass the 38th parallel. They defeated your men, because they wouldn't let you destroy the enemy's lines of communication or bomb his railroads. They have robbed your nation, and they filled it with spies, and they're fighting to continue to fill it with spies to destroy your way of life while they make war on your right to be Christian and say that they're only fighting segregation and discrimination. Let me tell you, any intelligent American that doesn't discriminate in favor of Christianity as against evil, conspiracy, and lie is no true Christian. And any individual that doesn't want to separate from America the forces of evil that are trying to flood into it by any legal gate that we can put up is not intelligent. So listen to the latest one. Someone said, what was going on during that peace conference? Wasn't what happened when four men sat together. What I want to know is what went on when two of them got together somewhere over a vodka cocktail. Listen. The United States and Russia today have reached a high-level agreement in a new round of preliminary talks on the Eisenhower-Baruch peace plan of the ACA. The administration said that the new Adam talks were between Secretary of State Dulles and Soviet Ambassador Zarulin in the initial stages, and that later, possibly, Britain and Canada will be permitted to join. The atomic powers will join if progress is made. Soviet Minister Molotov not only agreed in secret sessions with Mr. Dulles to the new atomic parley, but he agreed to the pooling of atomic stockpiles, resources, the material, the banning of atomic weapons. Treason. Who won? Mr. Molotov. Let me tell you this. You remember who was Mr. Dulles' law partner? Red Dean, that we just brought back from Korea. You remember who was Undersecretary of State to Mr. Acheson and who had control of Asia policy when we lost it through the conspiracies that turned it over? Mr. Dulles. You remember who was involved in representing Asiatic as well as Russian interests when Acheson, Hiss and Acheson was a law firm that made $1 million on one commission? Do you know who handled a subsidy of that contract for Mr. Acheson? Mr. Dulles. What we need is a grand investigation inside these United States of men who've made money serving the Reds directly or indirectly, or supported those whose conspiracy have helped deliver the world to the hand of the Antichrist. You can hang the Rosenbergs or burn them in electric chair, and that was all too late. And I think they should have been executed a lot sooner than they were. You can throw Alger Hiss in the penitentiary, and he should have been electrocuted along with the Rosenbergs. But you should make all these others stand trial. But I can assure you there isn't any difference between a traitor in the State Department and a traitor who is a subordinate. So if you don't dare talk like that, they don't dare stop our talking like this. Well, this is true. Let me tell you this.
the most dangerous, insidious conspiracy of all time, continue to destroy your society, now can unfettered, accomplished by the seeking of Red China, which has already been secretly agreed to. I had several United States senators adopt the script we're going to resist. It's going to be futility. Red China is going to be admitted. They're going to start voting us down, and the new security regulations will go in, and the largest number of people by least common denominator will decide issues, and America will be outvoted and done. Civil liberties bill, which would guarantee all the world social security and economic equality with housing paid for and with all the other benefits which your initiative and your creative ability guarantees you will be given freely to the world, and the Russian least common denominator Soviet policy would cause you to pay the expense or at least impoverish yourself to a standard lower than a peon accomplishment. That's a part of the design. And they can vote that in and force you to take it if you don't ratify it or not under a mass security council decision.
That's only a part of that question. There's one thing about the economy of the kingdom. You know how the economy of the kingdom guarantees prosperity? God says, you work and I'll bless you. I'll give you greater wisdom, greater initiative. What you produce and I'll supply. I'll send you sun and I'll send you the rain. I'll grant you vision. I'll give you creative ability. If you will observe me and obey my laws, I will destroy the forces that will destroy you by giving you knowledge to combat disease, by using my power to encircle you from the plagues that will destroy you. You obey and I'll bless. But you disobey and join yourself with my enemies, and you'll curse your blessings, and trouble will come nigh you. Oh, people say this is one of the United Nations. You know what Jesus said? One of the signs of the last days is that you shall be hated of the United Nations for my name's sake. Well, you say it doesn't say that. If it does say you'll be hated of all nations for my name's sake. When at the end of the age. Well, you say, well, that means all the nations. No, that's not practical. You wouldn't be hated for being a Christian in Britain. You wouldn't be hated for being a Christian in Scandinavia. You wouldn't be hated for being a Christian in America. But you'll be hated by the All Nations movement that won't even accept Jesus the Christ and is afraid to pray for fear that it will discourage or it will make somebody who hates his name that's joined to it angry. He said they will be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And who will they deliver you to? They'll deliver you to the synagogues and the magistrates. Let me tell you tonight that the conspiracy to destroy Christian civilization and the conspiracy to spread world communism is a Zionist Jewish conspiracy for world power. I sat in the office yesterday of Senator Jack Kenney, one of California's greatest legislators. He was chairman of our state legislature. He's the most courageous single legislator I think I have ever listened to in the United States outside of men like Jenner and McCarthy in Washington, D.C. He said, Dr. Swift, I've just finished a new book called The Trojan Horse. It's more important than anything I've ever written. John Beatty, that wrote The Iron Curtain, writing the foreword to it. He says, it's all ready now. It's about to go off the press. He said, the conspiracy, the Anti-Defamation League, representing the ADL and the world communism and Zionism, rolling the what? The Trojan Horse that they're using both to, in immigration as well as in Soviet conspiracy. The big names, the hands behind the scenes, the design to surrender us all unto a program outlined and now implemented by the United Nations to liquidate our patriots and reduce us to servitude is unequaled in history. And he said, I've got every bit of it documented, and I've got it where no one can deny it, both out of their documents that they themselves quote, and out of documents out of investigation and security. And he said, you know why I think we're going to win? I said, I know we're going to win because of destiny and because God Almighty will not let truth and Christian civilization go down. He says, this evil thing's going to collapse. Let me show you something. He pulled out on his desk a great pile of letters. He said, you remember that you folks distributed every one of my books on the ADL and on the Zionist conspiracy and so forth, and you sent them to congressmen, you sent them to senators, you sent them to people all over the nation. Now look at this stack of letters. He said, here they are. And he started to read to me letters from congressmen, from senators, from leaders, and from attorney generals, and from people of influence in state after state, as well as from the Senate and the Congress of the United States. And here were hundreds of legislators thanking him for the book. thanking him for the revelation that had brought a lot of things together they didn't understand, and saying this is the first time they realized how the hand of Antichrist was tied in with the ADL, World Jewry, Communism, Zionism, and the Fifth Column, and now they were beginning to see the UN in its proper light. When I saw that mass of letters and I looked at the names that were on it, I knew that America was on the way up and out, and the forces of evil were going out and down. There is no doubt that we are historically watching a prophetic renaissance in the Elijah ministry in this hour to awaken the nation in this hour. We had the privilege yesterday being one of the members of that Ford Committee of Henry Ford I, which committee is carried down to give the Henry Ford Award for patriotism. And this year it was given to Senator Jack Kenney, and we had the pleasure of being one to join in the presentation to Senator Kenney of the Henry Ford Award for Outstanding Patriotism in the United States, a most beautiful gold plaque with the record of the senator engraved on. And this is the Henry Ford Award, not Henry Ford II, who doesn't know whether he's coming or going, but Henry Ford I, who knew how to do something on his own initiative, and he knew how to lose further what he thought was American independence. Let me tell you this, that in the hours that we face before us, the seriousness of this issue will become more pronounced. The action of the forcing out of administration of even those who the administration has working for them, if they disagree, is going to crystallize this fight until now it's going into a harder struggle than ever before. In a few days, we're going to announce to the world the formation of one of the new great enterprises, a Bricker for President Club, all over America. Time we need the leadership of men like this. Watch it. It's going to go like a mushroom. Listen. It is important that I call your attention to this. There is nothing new under the sun. God Almighty warned us about the existence of such a conspiracy. In fact, so complete was the warning that he warned us as a nation, we being the real kingdom, the real nations that are descended out of the house of the true Israel, which was the descendants of Abraham, from which the peoples were captured by Sennacherib and migrated into Europe, produced the Anglo-Saxons, Scandinavian, Nordic, Baths, Lombards, our people. In fact, today there is hardly an anthropologist that does not agree that the great mass of the Caucasian immigration into Europe came out of the captivity released by Shalmaneser from Sennacherib's conquest. Now listen. God Almighty said, now listen, my people. Listen, O thou princes. For there is fury in my hands, and I am angry. And I'm going to take the wine of the cup of this fury, and I'm going to make all the nations, the United Nations, to drink it. This I say against thee, saith the Lord, because thou hast permitted thyself to be joined unto Dedan, and to Buzz, and all the kings of Zimuri, and the peoples of the north, and the powers of the north, and the kingdoms of the world, all of them gathered together in the face of the kings of Shiloh. Or Tetrach was Shiloh, and all of them drunk together in power. Therefore, saith the Lord of hosts, listen, I am the God of Israel. Drink ye now and be drunken, fall, because I will now send the sword among you. It shall come that in my wrath and my judgment, saith the Lord, ye shall now drink of the cup of this judgment. For lo, I see this city of all the nations, this city of judgment and of evil. Ye shall not go unpunished, for I shall call for a sword. Therefore prophesy against them, saith the Lord of hosts. Prophesy from on high. A noise shall come, even unto the ends of the earth. For the Lord hath a controversy with all these nations. I will plead against them, and it will be given unto them, for they are wicked to the sword, saith the Lord, and for their conspiracy. And the noise shall come up so great that it shall be heard to the ends of the earth. Someone said, what is this about? It is the thing Jesus talked about. If you were to see their genocide convention pass now, for me making this address to you tonight, they could seize me, extradite me to the United Nations, and try me in Switzerland, and throw me in a foreign jail, or put me in the salt mines in Soviet Russia, under the agreement right now, a genocide convention. And you wouldn't have to ratify it by your Senate. An executive agreement could put it in effect, or without that executive agreement, the Security Council with Red China in it could pass the law. The Lord said, get out of it. This I hold against you, Israel. You have gathered with all the kings of the earth, with all the peoples of the earth, with all these peoples, and we have formed this great union of evil. And I'm against all these nations, said the Lord. He said, except you separate yourselves from this thing, you will receive the evil that shall fall upon. There's only one sign inside the United Nations that's good. No other than Rose Hook said in a speech recently given before the United Nations. She said one of the most serious things with which we have faced is that some 73 to 4% of the American people are now against the United Nations due to the scurrilous literature and the rumors that have been spread by those who are against it in the United States. He said previous polls have shown at the end of the war and after its first formation that the majority of people were for it with less than 12% against it. Today 73% are against it, and we can blame nationalism and these super patriots for this great evil. Now what is the matter with nationalism? What's the matter with patriotism? What's the matter with a person loving his country? For God Almighty has ordained that a man that doesn't love his country can have no part in the kingdom of God when that nation is a part of God's kingdom. Let me show you this. That in this policy, the Zionists came out with something rather interesting the other day. They said, seeing the great rising agitation against the United Nations in the United States, it would seem wise that we remove for security the United Nations headquarters from New York City to Jerusalem. I'm for that 100% with all due apologies to the Arabs. Now let me show you something. This suggestion upon the part of the Zionists who were afraid for the welfare of the United Nations, desired to see it move to Jerusalem, they look as though they think that it's their United Nations and they have a paternal influence over it, don't they? Well, I think that's true. I think they're a little bit worried about what's happening and people are waking up, so they want to move it down their own backyard to Jerusalem where they think it's going to be safe. Now, the only thing that will save New York from an utter disaster that will wipe that city from the face of the earth will be moving. Did you know that? But the Lord says, I not only have a controversy with all these nations, but that headquarters of the economy of evil and that mystery Babylon would slave all men and would put a system higher than Christian civilization and put a system in power to which men would have to bow in order to do business. God said, I'm not only against it, but I'm going to drop it in the waters of the sea, or like a stone dropped in the sea. Woe to that nation of all nations in that day, to that city of all nations, that mystery Babylon, the great. Now, Nostradamus, who had a great vision as a seer, to a great extent was somewhat like a modern Isaiah, warned that that city of all nations of the New World, which had become the city of merchants and of traffic that stood between the two rivers, would someday fall and sink, and the whole thing was shaken an earthquake, and it cracked in the waters between the North and the East River. And he said that it could take place in this time. The only thing that could save it would be if this city of evil were suddenly disbanded. Let me tell you something. God Almighty will wipe out that center in your time. Either the noise that will be heard at the ends of the earth will be the great rising of indignation as this nation rises in wrath and tears it down stone by stone. And when that starts, the greatest immigration out of America will take place that we've had since the refugees flooded in here that were supposed to have been shot by Hitler. Self-evident they didn't kill those 3.5 million because they're buying up the main street of every town with the money that they printed with the plates that Mr. Morgenthau gave them. Secret is out. Listen. You know why I think they might move it? First place, I think America is going to start the greatest movement in history to get out of it. It's going to be the rising voice of the people denouncing this plan of the Canaanites, and I think they're going to move it. The Lord said, now where are they going with it? He said, over here in Zechariah. So now behold, for lo, they have come and they have gathered all the nations at Jerusalem. The Lord said, I'm against them. Behold, already the power that put this in being has taken Jerusalem. Half the city has been rifled, the women ravished, half the city has fallen and passed into captivity. The people that lived in it, the residue, had to flee the city. They did? Sure it did. Jewish conspiracy that built the United Nations and made the Palestine, ran the Arabs out of their homes, took half of the city, ravaged both Protestant as well as Catholic, theological people in their convents and churches, murdered, raped, and murdered in the most vicious state that's been established in your time, as we allies. So now they want to move their pet conspiracy down there for safekeeping. That's a good place to put it, because the Lord said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to drop that country in the sea, split it in half, and throw half of it underwater.
So while we're tearing up the world, let's just go ahead and do it.
Come and read the book of Zechariah. Read the 14th chapter. You'll see what the Lord has to say about this. Someone says, I can't accept this content of the scripture is inspired. I can't believe in prophecy. Well, listen, my friends, a fool that would look at the state of events would have to recognize the inspiration of the Bible. This you found over the last 6 and 7 years, you've been right. What we've told you as it relates to the prophecies of this book have come to pass. And the developments are going just exactly like the book said they would. And this is the only guide you can be absolutely right with. Politicians that went along with Mr. Eisenhower found out that we were right and they were wrong. And parties that thought they had to save the party first and finally come to the realization that that was a mistake, they should have saved America first. Let me tell you this. God Almighty says it'll go in the sea and into the sea. It must surely go. And there is no doubt in my mind that we are facing one of the most strategic hours in history for the craft of Satan's economy. The attempt is so open and so brazen to ignore the people, to hold license of power, to strengthen the conspiracy, to tie the hands of a nation. It's so open that the nation is enraged and is demanding action. You know, we have a funny policy. We can be tricked. We can be in the process of having every great right which we have taken away from us slowly. We can be faced with a plan that denies us our independence and our right of representative government. And you think that's not silly? Listen, even when they were locking up Louis XIV a few days before, when he came down the street, they all ran out and cheered. Right. People are silly. It is to be said that the Republican Committee did forget to send somebody to greet him. Maybe that's a good sign. Of course, Goody Knight got down there because that was his hour. I'm going to tell you this. I have no respect for men that have become the tools of those that would destroy our nation. And it is high time that the Church of Christ awaken to its responsibility of warning all men that those that serve this power of Antichrist betray not only Christ in his name, but they betray the whole structure of our civilization and society. One of the subjects we're going to talk on next week here is going to be the gospel of death. Let me tell you, there is something so deadly that's happening throughout the churches of America, throughout the nation, and throughout the world. Men better wake up to it. It's preaching a gospel without Christ. It's talking about God without an identity. I've never heard the president once use the name of Christ since he's been in office. That's one man said that he was told by Weinberg to go down and join the Presbyterian Church and he'd have more influence. That's the first time he'd been inside of the church for years. We're not against him just the man. We think he knows less than any other man in Washington, D.C. about what's going on. But the thing that we're opposed to is the thing that represents executive leadership that is now in the hands of control that would deny America the right to direct its own destiny. And it could be done with honor. And we're ashamed of the Berlin Conference. We're ashamed of its deal that meets with Red China and then decides the fate of the world. We are ashamed that we would trust the devil when we have been warned that in the hour when men talk about his peace will come sudden destruction. Into my hands was placed a report that came out of Pravda. This is from the TASS, the official Russian news agency. They were telling the peoples of Soviet Russia that they must continue to expend every effort to increase their military strength on the far-flung outposts all over the world that they were now holding. This is what they said. They said, the hour will soon be ours. Our opposition is stretched over the world. We will move all places at once. While in Washington, I talked to one great military man. man of experience and a man still associated with politics as far as the department he represented were concerned. I said, what do you think will happen? He said, I think that Russia will open up a new front, possibly the expansion of the Indo-Chinese War, possibly a struggle between Yugoslavia, Austria in the south toward the direction of Italy, but he says there'll be a new front. Then he says we will have to move our troops there. Now strategically, let me tell you this. Following United States News last week did you a great service in showing you where you stand because of the trick that has been played in your foreign policy. The end of World War II, you looked after the welfare of about 200 million people. By the end of the agreements that were entered into and the completion of those agreements in 1949, by the time you had finished 1949, you were looking after the welfare or pledged to help the welfare of 312 million people. By the end of 1951, you were pledged to protect 479 million people. By the end of 1952, you were pledged to protect 563 million people, and now you're pledged to protect 670 million people, and the area that you have to cover in thousands and thousands or millions of square miles is almost beyond the scope of you and I to conceive. So what we are faced with is that we have steadily and consistently lost areas of the earth to the enemy, and steadily and consistently, in order to bear out our responsibility of leading the nations against the force that our secret enemies within have been committing power to, we have had to take on the obligation of holding the front lines everywhere. Now think for a moment. This great nation of God's kingdom, there's no doubt about your creative power being greater than all the rest of the Christian nations practically combined as far as their present outputs are concerned. This nation now is scattered out from Indochina, Korea, South Africa, Iceland, Greenland, the Arctic, scattered out across the south and scattered across North Africa, helping to hold the line in Greece and in Turkey, supporting and building and engineering development for the protection of the Arabs against the forces of Russia from the north. We are helping to build the lines of defense that would protect Scandinavia, and we are stretched out until 160 million people are protecting half the earth. So I said to this great military leader, what would happen if Russia attacked in somewhere now? What do you think will happen? He said, I think to start something, maybe you'll be in Italy. Then we'll have to transfer some of our strength over there. He says, we're so designed that we can move it from any place to some other place in the world, to wherever it breaks out, why, they'll hold the line temporarily, withdrawing until we can support it and win there, wherever we are. The only thing that helps us do this is the great speed and striking power of our air force. So I ask you this question. Suppose Russia strikes in about six places at once. Then he says, God, he says, only knows what happened when we stretched out too thin. So what I'm telling you was task news agency report. It said every effort must be bent for this final sacrifice, for when we move to set the world free, we will move everywhere at once. You know what that'll be? That's Armageddon. We will move everywhere at once. Now, you can't take the army of 160 million people and put them everywhere at once. So that's the strategy. So I said, even Russia can't do that yet, because Russia has the Chinese fighting in Indochina. She has the North Koreans and the Chinese fighting in North Korea. She has communist hordes that she's moved out of the sea, infiltrated into Poland and into Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. She has, in Latvia and Lithuania, she has, at this very moment, phalanges everywhere scattered throughout Romania. She has the communist armies of Tito in Yugoslavia, which have been silly and foolish and as utterly emaciated of intellect and necessary resistance, the policy of your government to arm Yugoslavia, who all the time was communist and now has gone back into the communist orbit and is now going to be the armies that Russia contemplates using against Austria, which is one of our old enemies, and they're everywhere, the battle. Now, the Jews will open up the offensive against the Arabs and against Egypt to steal the Negev, as they've already threatened to do, and are creating crisis there now. They've run the guns into Africa, and the Mau Maus are ready to explode while Russian leaders are stirring a red revolution in Africa. You know what that worldwide explosion means? It means Armageddon on. Let me show you something. India has been an explosion all week. Great riots. Attacks on American embassies. Riot going on street after street. Remember what that sounds like? 1939. Explosion, riot, starting up. And then the boom. This isn't the first time. Listen. Russia would not prematurely touch off with communist centers in India, the riots in India, unless he was prepared to do something. So we are watching this strange igma of all over everywhere sudden action. It's going to spring into being. America has a fifth column, as Edgar Hoover told us last Monday night, on the inside, in industry. Got it out. Someone said, is there any hope? Yes. The hope is that an awakening nation is going to have to repudiate all agreements that weaken both our security and the security of our allies. And then we're going to have to take a realistic policy towards survival. The dog goes back to China, or to France. He tells them that there's going to be peace now in the 8-year war in Indochina, because they're going to talk it all over in Geneva. Mr. Molotov told him so. You've sent planes and men to Indochina, I suppose, to implement the peace. Because, my friends, the struggle is shifting, and Japan is one of the next targets of the Red Invasion. And we have this picture. Someone says, what about the economy of the enemy? Because the enemy knows something. Because the men who've been manipulating the economy of the nations of the world, both through their conspiracies and through their banking houses, know something. They know that money itself is not wealth. I listened to one of America's great economists demonstrating that all he knows about economy is hitched to economy as it is in the United States. He said, you don't have to worry about an enemy attack because they are broke. They don't have any money. They're bankrupt. But the enemy has learned that if you've got manpower and raw materials, you've got finished production. That if you've got men, you've got armies, and if you've got groceries, you can march. Someone says money. You have to have money. Well, they can print that all day long. Someone says there's nothing to back it up. Certainly there's something to back it up. The seats and the tundras, the tanks, the planes, they're all in their business. But their business is not to produce, but to take and redistribute. Now, America is one of the strangest positions economically that they have ever intended to take us into. I stood before one of the administrators in the office of a man charged with the entire monetary policy of the United States government in your legislature. And I was discussing with him what a return to a sound economy, asking why we didn't repudiate and just let die all these reciprocal trade agreements, which are such a big piece of folly. They're about to die out unless this administration renews them, which is giving signs it's going to do. He said that we couldn't do that because we need so many of these vital materials for defense. So we got the vital materials right here at home, and all we've got to do is develop them. And he said, you mean subsidize American mines? You mean subsidize farm products? Well, I said, you can subsidize British mines, you can subsidize the mines of the Hottentots, and you can subsidize the mines and the raw products of India, and you can subsidize them in Bolivia, you can subsidize them in the United States. What do you mean by subsidizing? If you mean making sure that these goods can be produced without bankruptcy, the only place where we're not doing it is in America. I said, isn't it a strange thing that we don't have one sound monetary policy because we don't even have a metal value, nor do we have a commodity value upon which it can be fixed? Well, so we have a silver standard. And on the standard that we have, everything that we buy from a foreign power, we buy at a higher price and we redistribute it back to our consumer at and charge the taxpayer for purchasing it. And while we get it, we shut down some American producer on the same commodity. This man said to me, Dr. Swift, nobody understands money. I said, that's so. He said, that's right. And I said, then what are you supposed to be in charge of Senate Monetary Policy for? I said, you know who first told the world that that was the story they were to tell the Christians, the Gentiles, the Goyim? Mr. Rothschild, Amstel Mayor. He says, you tell them that nobody understands money and that we'll run it. He says, give me the power to coin and make money and distribute it in any country, and I don't care who makes the laws. Amstel Mayor. I said, that's just what's going on here. Mr. Morgenthau understands money. Mr. Frankfurter understands money. Mr. Warburg understands money. Mr. Myers understands money. The boys behind the World Monetary Bank understand money, but they're just keeping you from getting your hands on it or restoring the functions of a sound currency back to the hands of Congress, or the restoration of an economy that doesn't work on interest and usury, that's in their hands instead of in the hands of a people and based on production. You realize how silly the situation is? An American flock miner produces gold. You're not on the gold standard, but he can't sell it for what he can get for it, so a farmer can get any price he wants for his seed. The gold miner has to sell it to the government for $35, but Mr. Baruch buys it for $35.70, exports it to Europe, and sells it for $70. Factually, he distributed it to certain Boris interests in Belgium for $48, and they sold it back to America for $70. That's so you wouldn't run out, so they wouldn't have something to export again. If you try to buy it, my friend, and export it, and see whether you can get a license, your nose isn't shaped right. So here's the story. It's an economy of debt. They make you buy your own gold back, because you've got a price so low that they can buy it, export it, but make you buy it back because you have to have it. Because half the nations will do business without it. That's why they threw you off of it to begin with. Somebody thought that was prophecy, developing a great deliverance for America. Let me tell you something. There is no way to get out of the hands of this thing until we surrender America to this great truth. That is that America must be Christian, that America must return its economy to a divinely biblical standard, and must not surrender its economy into the hands of the enemies of its civilization, and must not permit itself to do business on a Babylonian standard, which means to create artificial scarcity at the expense of the consumer and the peoples of the earth. Let me show you how foolish this is in reduction in actual prices. You know, behind Mr. Warburg and his World Bank, his investments in 11 nations, which you don't have to pay income tax on, by the way, because he keeps those outside of America. Control of dairy price, for one thing. Control of grains in the hands of the rich birds who folded up the greatest grain producing cereal companies in America in the great warehouses when they pulled the market, the depression, which was artificial. To show you how far reaching the plan goes, the farmer prices raised by their gradual increase in costs and everything else cannot meet the price which the consumer, which he has to deal with, which, my friend, is the commission man. So, the commission man will only give him 40, 45 cents for a pound of butter. But he has to get 80, so the United States government subsidizes the difference. The commission man gets it, and by the time you get it, it's at a price you can hardly afford to pay after they've taken all they can take from you in taxes. But the amount that they have bought to withdraw it from the market, in order that they might hold the price up and put in warehouses until it's rancid, has been charged to you 100%. But the reason why this is because we have imported from Holland and from Scandinavia millions of pounds of butter. Because we had a trade agreement with them, and if we didn't do that, they wouldn't buy our radios, which they can produce anyhow. But this is because the reciprocal trade, because every time it makes an exchange, the World Monetary Bank makes 7%, and Mr. Warburg makes 3%. Argentina is a great natural beef-raising country, and it's pampas. That's a good thing. The world needs beef. There isn't nearly enough beef produced to satisfy the hunger needs of the world. But America also has a great beef industry. Across the great plains of Wyoming and in Montana and out across Texas, across our nation, we can produce more of all the beef America can consume. Now, the last thing America should be importing is beef. But the enemy knows this, and in order to break the great productive power of the nation, they can't bankrupt because beef will breed and grass will grow. And the enemy wants to destroy you, and it wants to take over your society, but it can't do it because it's just naturally strong, because beef grows, grass grows, the people eat beef. So it says, we'll destroy your industry. So they make an agreement. They say, we will enter into agreement with you, and we will import from Argentina millions and millions of tons of beef. But Europe needs beef, England needs beef, and Europe wants Argentina beef, but we're buying Argentina beef. We bring it into the United States, and we did it at the cost to the United States government of a tremendous amount of money, which is charged to you in taxes. Then when we brought it in, we had more money, so we knew what to do. So we put this on the market, in the hands of the consumer, at a lower cost than the same commission man could buy beef in America. So the beef price fell. So then America's beef raisers were faced with a crisis. They couldn't get a price for their beef, and they were afraid they were going to be stuck with it, and they started to sell their herds, and the commission man bought it up. And the big herds went bankrupt, and the little farmer was going bankrupt, and everybody who was in the beef business was going bankrupt. But who was taking over the paper? Chase National Bank was buying it up. Who's Chase National Bank? Mr. Warburg and Company. Might be interested to know that Booth, who shot Lincoln, was a Warburg too, that changed his name. They haven't started that lately. They did it a long time ago. The reason they did was because Lincoln had decided to create scrip to pay off America's debt instead of borrowing it from the Warburg. The picture is a long one, but it's still the picture of a long conspiracy. They think their monetary fund is the answer. They think their speed of exchange is the answer. It would bankrupt American industry. They would like to import into America all the shoes that America is going to wear next year, and those agreements would already be made right now with Czechoslovakia if Czechoslovakia wasn't in the hands of Soviet Russia. But the State Department wishes to get an agreement with Russia whereby they can resume trade with these countries and flood your country with a final point to break your back. While they talk about eliminating recession, they want to flood America with the goods which would come through Russian trade, and you would gain nothing. They say, oh, America would gain production. You wouldn't gain production. Now, what's this to do with property? Because God has a plan for economy. He didn't say you had to work 6 days a week. He said you only had to produce the things you needed. If America can produce all the shoes it can wear, all the automobiles it wants, all the necessary conveniences for its civilization, if it can produce those goods that it consumes and meet the market of those that wish to buy goods from without and pay for them, and do it in 3 days a week, then that's all America needs to do, is work 3 days a week. All America needs to do is see that the purchasing power is in the hands of its people to buy the things that it wants. America hasn't learned to export to itself as yet. Because the functionaries that have been controlling money have been operating on the policy that the scarcity of money makes it valuable. Let me tell you this. That is a sound program of economy in this book. It calls for eliminating the hand of the enemy that at this hour is aspiring to destroy your society from the control of your commodities, your raw materials, and your money. We tell you that great men are thinking on this. We talk to economists in Washington. You know who one of the great economists is in America today? Senator Griffin. He's one of the most brilliant economists in Washington. He's one of the great money economists. He's one of the great voices against usury. He said America should never borrow money from Jewish banks or we might say from international banks, but it's all the same. He never borrowed money from these banks and paid interest on a bond. He said, because we have to print the money that we loan them to loan back to us, so all we have to do is print the money and guarantee that money on the production that has to guarantee it anyhow. He said, America's bill in the last war would be just one half what they are if we had not negotiated through a commissioned third party, which was not necessary and gained absolutely nothing for us but an increase in our burden and our debt. Someone said, well, if they're working so well on the economic level, then why are they resorting to the military level? Because they still have not been able to stop the rain, the grass, and the cattle. They still don't know how to stop America's blessings, its initiative, and its creative genius. So they are trying to saddle you now with a redistribution of that wealth to the world. I've talked to a number of businessmen in the last few days. Tonight's the first time Mr. Eisenhower admits he's got a recession. He said he's laying plans in Palm Springs to meet the recession. There's a recession up. Businessmen have been doing about 40% less business in the last few weeks than they have ever had since the days of the Depression. Any theater owner will tell you he's down to 15 or 20% of the former attendance. All sorts of centers of both amusement as well as centers of relaxation everywhere, beaches and mountain resorts are off this year until there's practically no surplus money being spent in these areas. Shoe stores and clothing stores, which were a must, are citing that their sales are down to an absolute minimum right now, and it's falling into the rough schoolwear and workwear category. Now, so it says, what's the reason for it? The reason is that the taxes are actually, as it relates to the cost of living, higher than they have ever been in the history of a nation, and the surplus is being staffed out of it. That's the reason why. The result is that, added to the whole increasing cost and conspiracy that's involved in this pattern, they are seeking to create a scarcity of purchasing power and control the entire flow of commodity and goods. Now, there will be a release just before elections. There's going to be a release in sudden credit money. The design is being laid right now. If you're going to be told that great statesmanship conquered the Depression and have economically staved off the recession, and that's why money in good times suddenly returned again, and the contracts were so quickly signed, and you'll go right down the line, and America would be voting again for the same thing. Now let me tell you something. The whole flow of prosperity, recession, or depression is artificial. And it's in the hands of the powers behind the scenes that are dictating those situations. There's just one answer. Rid America of Antichrist with every legal means, and you will restore a Christian economy, and you will save the nation.